Good morning. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich.
And I'm Chris Vandercook.
It's Friday, April 26th from HPR2. It's The Conversation. An NRA-HRA shootout.
Live in concert, virtual David Bowie.
Wait. What's a cinecast?
East Coast jazz, island style.
Plus the world view from Al Jazeera, a merry in advance of May backyard quiz, and why good government may not be an oxymoron. Here's the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Obama is poised to sign a bill that spares the Federal Aviation Administration from imposing furloughs on air traffic controllers. Congress has passed a measure that's likely to come as welcome news to flyers who are ensnared in thousands of flight delays this week. NPR's Tamara Keith gives us the details of a bill that has passed the House a day after the Senate approved it.
The bill will give the Federal Aviation Administration more flexibility in how it makes the spending cuts required by the sequester. The FAA won't actually get more money, but it will be able to shift funds from low-priority areas to high-priority areas, like air traffic control. Republicans argue the bill wasn't necessary because they say the FAA already had the flexibility and was choosing the path of most suffering. Democrats, like Congressman David Price from North Carolina, say it's a Band-Aid.
I want to address these crises as much as any member. I want to contain the damage. But damage control is not a budget policy.
The bill passed overwhelmingly, 361 to 41. Tamara Keith, NPR News, The Capitol.
President Obama is pledging to fight every step of the way to defend abortion rights. Today, he became the first sitting president to address a Planned Parenthood conference in person. He warned that an assault on women's rights is underway across the country, with nearly every state legislature introducing bills to further limit a woman's ability to access birth control or terminate a pregnancy.
When you read about some of these laws, you want to check the calendar. You want to make sure you're still living in 2013.
President Obama urged the gathering to drum up support for his health care law to ensure medical choices are protected. But anti-abortion groups have vowed to step up their campaigns against what they call Obamacare state by state. White House says President Obama will deliver the commencement address at Ohio State University May 5th on the campus where he campaigned for re-election. Obama is also scheduled to speak at Morehouse in Atlanta and the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis later in the month. Britain's Prime Minister David Cameron says there's limited but growing evidence of the use of chemical weapons in Syria's civil war. NPR's Philip Reeve says Cameron agrees with President Obama that this issue is a red line.
Cameron says that, like others, Britain's also seen very disturbing evidence of the use of chemical weapons, probably, he said, by the regime led by Bashar al-Assad.
It's extremely serious. This is a war crime.
But how should the international community respond? Cameron's calling for the gathering of more evidence of chemical weapons use and enhanced support, meanwhile, for the Syrian opposition.
And in my view, what we need to do, and we're doing some of this already, is shape that opposition, work with them, train them, mentor them, help them, so that we put the pressure on the regime. And so we can bring this to an end.
But Cameron made clear that, like the US, Britain's reluctant to send in troops. Philip Reeves, NPR News, London.
Dow is up 14 at 14,716. This is NPR. The death toll is still rising from a collision in southern Afghanistan. At least 45 passengers on a bus were killed when they struck the wreckage of a truck that had been ambushed by Taliban insurgents. Police said they left the oil tanker in the middle of the road for several days because the area was still too dangerous to enter. The South Korean government is announcing it's withdrawing all remaining citizens working at a jointly run factory complex in North Korea. The decision was disclosed after North Korea rejected Seoul's request for talks on the factory park. And that had been closed for nearly a month amid heightened tensions on the peninsula. Pyongyang has been threatening its southern neighbor as well as its allies with the possibility of military action. The first round of the NFL draft is complete, and so far the stars of the show are the players who normally aren't in the spotlight. NPR's Tom Goldman reports offensive linemen dominated the early picks.
300-pound offensive tackles Eric Fisher and Luke Jokel were the top two selections, going to Kansas City and Jacksonville. That's the first time since 1970 that offensive tackles went 1 and 2. Indeed, the first round was a celebration of players who anchor both sides of the line of scrimmage. 17 of the 32 picks were offensive and defensive linemen. Also notable, there were no running backs taken and only one quarterback. Buffalo chose Florida State's E.J. Manuel with the 16th pick. And Manti Te'o still is waiting to be drafted. The Notre Dame linebacker was one of college football's best and most controversial players this past season after he was caught up in a hoax involving a fake girlfriend. Tom Goldman, NPR News.
Dow is up 21 at 14,722. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Gruber Family Foundation to help extend the depth of international coverage of the world's most significant issues.
This is The Conversation on HPR 2. I'm Chris Vandercook.
I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Days after the Newtown shootings, anger and shock took root in demands for stricter gun control. The national and state debates played out on and offline in social media and the traditional variety, spiked and flattened, shifted and swung in concert with events. In Hawaii, we saw some of that, including with a bill requiring police to ID and check the background of a gun owner registering a firearm procured outside Hawaii. You might think the Hawaii Rifle Association, the NRA's state affiliate, would be dead set against it, but it isn't, unlike the NRA, which opposed the measure. So how can a state affiliate and the national organization be at odds? HRA President Harvey Gerwig has an explanation, and he joins us by phone. Good morning, and thank you for being here.
Good morning. You're welcome.
We're talking about SB 69, that under special circumstances would have the police fingerprinting and photographing and IDing a person who is trying to register a firearm that's been procured outside of Hawaii. And you like this?
Well, it's already being done for everybody inside Hawaii. So if I'm a resident and I'm going to be a first-time firearm owner and I go down to buy a gun, I'm going to be fingerprinted, I'm going to be photographed, and I'm going to have a request sent off to the FBI for a background check. So that already is in place and has been for a long time. The change is only in when people bring firearms from the mainland, that they had been allowed to just walk into HPD and register the firearm without the background check.
Right, so your point is making it consistent with what everyone in Hawaii has to do and therefore sort of making a good set of laws better.
Well, I would have to agree with that, I think. Everybody here has to have the background check, and for many years, the people coming in didn't, which doesn't seem to be very consistent and probably not very prudent. Now, where the bind comes in, NRA has taken a position nationwide, and probably wisely so, that they want no fees, no hassle created for anybody that wants to register a firearm. And we feel that our position is a little bit different. We're already doing that here. So we should have some consistency for people coming in as well as the people who live here.
So, Harvey, why would the NRA feel compelled then to send in testimony opposing SB 69?
Well, like I said, they've taken a national position on, you know, not infringing on anyone's rights or ability to register. The big kicker came in the fact that HPD charges each person that needs an FBI check $16.50. Now, as it stands now, and the only way we would support it is that's a one-time fee. That doesn't happen every time you want to go register a firearm. It's a one-time fee, and we just don't feel that that's very onerous, contrary to what the NRA feels. And you find it's very seldom that we part ways on an issue. You know, we all are aligned as supporters of the Second Amendment. We rarely, you know, walk to a different drummer. But this one, we just couldn't reconcile between the two organizations.
And
so
we had to
take a different position.
And you didn't feel that in any way that this made the, you know, the state affiliate look a little foolish when, as we're looking through all the testimony, there's yours, and then right next to it is the NRA saying exactly the opposite, that it wasn't confusing to people?
To be quite honest, I think everybody looked foolish in this situation. It's quite distressing that, and when all the legislators get testimony that, you know, we want it, we don't want it, we want it, we don't want it, and they're both gun groups, it's pretty confusing. And we spent a lot of time talking with people trying to explain to them why we supported what we supported.
Which sort of brings up the question of, did everyone somehow have a greater discussion before this testimony was given? Was there any polling of members or any greater discussion with them, both nationally and locally, about this particular bill? Did you say anything to National about it?
Well, not on a national level. We don't have access to the national level.
Nobody maybe to tell them, look, we've got it handled. You don't need to put any testimony in about this?
That was the request, yes.
But they felt they had to.
That's correct, which I think is unfortunate.
So what about with local members? Did you sit down and have a real discussion with them about why you would put in this testimony in this way?
We have a very active social media network as well as an alert network. And our alerts go out daily to people, keeping them informed as to what's going on. The people who are in our network, who are HRA members and interested parties on our alert list, knew what was going on and had no problem with it.
So what's the way out of the confusion?
Say again?
Then what's the way out of the confusion? Because you mentioned that it sort of made everybody look foolish because you had gun groups both opposing and supporting SB 69, and that this was very confusing for lawmakers and confusing for those involved, too. Was there a better way this could have been handled?
There's always a better way, Beth Ann, but that isn't what happened this time.
Okay, but meanwhile, today, this is in conference. Any bead from you about what you think is going to happen?
Well, the Senate came forward in committee over the last week and agreed to support HD1, which is the House version, which has our preferred language in it. The Senate version did not have preferred language, and we would have fought that. So Senator Willis Farrell came forward, accepted the House language in HD1, and it's moving forward to the Ways and Means Committee for financing. There is a financing component of this bill, which we do not oppose, which would give HPD an undisclosed amount of money, which will be decided in the WAM committee. And that is to help them to support, you know, better registration. Right now, or in the past few months, being able to register a firearm has taken 5 hours per trip, and it can take up to 3 trips. So we're in support of better financing there that will allow them, number one, to open up a registration facility at the Kapolei Police Station so that all of the West Side residents don't have to come into Honolulu 3 different times, 5 hours per time.
Right, which seems fair and equitable when you look at someone's time and trying to get something done, make it easy for them to do it. Harvey, we got to go. We'll be watching later on today. Know you will, too.
Absolutely, and thanks so much for the exposure. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for the perspective. Harvey Gerwig is the president of the Hawaii Rifle Association, established in 1857. Its goals are the preservation of the Second Amendment and the advancement of sports involving shooting. The HRA is the state affiliate of the National Rifle Association. Later today, we may see which perspective the NRA's or the HRA's persuades lawmakers about the necessity of SB 69. You can read the testimony on our website, hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Hawaii Pacific University. The HPU Symphonic Band presents Heavy and Light, From William Byrd to David Bowie, a community concert, tomorrow evening at 7 at Roosevelt High School Auditorium. hpu.edu/spring-concert.
Millions of years ago, giants roamed the Earth. I'm Ira Flatto. Join me on Science Friday for a look at Utah's paleontological treasures. We'll talk about the Utah Raptor, and it's not a sports team. Plus, what looking at the deserts of Utah can teach us about the planet Mars. All on Science Friday from NPR.
This morning from 9 to 11, right after the conversation.
This is the conversation on statewide, member-supported HBR2. Later in the show, is a virtual David Bowie legal? And Peter Sagal learns a little local economy of speech. Try wait, no tell ya.
People around the world tune into Hilo's annual Merry Monarch Festival to watch the hula competition. Many viewers, though, don't know that the festival did not include hula at its inception in 1963. Instead, the Merry Monarch Festival featured relay races and a Kalakaua Beard look-alike contest. It wasn't until 1971 that hula became part of the festivities. The halau competitions for ancient and modern styles have been the mainstay ever since, as well as the solo dance competition for Miss Aloha Hula. So let's tax our memory, Merry Monarch style, today. Who was the very first winner of the Miss Aloha Hula competition? Here's a hint. With a name like hers, she was a perfect fit for the title.
Telling of the rain in the valley and the swirling wind over the valley, lovely hula hen, oh, Hibanani.
It's the job of a band director to keep the music interesting for student performers, provide them with a valuable performing experience, and at the same time come up with music that audiences will enjoy. Joe Ruskowski, director of bands for Hawaii Pacific University, has given this particular challenge a lot of thought and has come up with a plan for his upcoming weekend concert that could open up a whole new avenue for performing musicians, virtual karaoke, with a very present but physically absent British superstar. Confused? Well, we certainly hope so. Fortunately, Joe is here to explain. And Joe, thinking out of the box has reached a new level with what you've done here.
Well, yeah, I even bought a box that we can actually use to think out of.
Exactly.
Not your usual setup here.
By way of
studio.
Illustration, yeah. But let's give a sort of capsule demonstration of what you're, or description of what you're doing. First.
Okay, yeah, we have this thing that we call reverse karaoke, or virtual karaoke, as you say. With karaoke, you go into the bar and you get to sing along with the band. You get to sing all the lyrics. You get to pretend you're Neil Diamond. You can
right.
sing Sweet Caroline all you want. But for reverse karaoke, we've kind of taken the opposite approach. I wanted to do a project where my band, the HPU Symphonic Band, could have a great singer on stage. And unfortunately, we don't have the funds to bring...
Budgetary considerations.
Yeah. That $4 budget that I have to bring in artists is not enough to get the top names in there.
He wanted eight, right?
Oh, yeah, well, we put all our money out for Makana last Saturday night,
yeah.
Which was an awesome concert with the orchestra. So our idea here was to have David Bowie sing with the band and have him perform Space Oddity, his classic 1969 hit. So what we were able to do was to get David Bowie's vocals only and have that perform with the band. I say that instead of him because it's the virtual David Bowie coming in.
Right. So this is the isolated vocal track from the original recording.
Yeah, would you like to hear a little bit of what we're talking about?
Absolutely.
Okay, this is once again from Space Oddity. I hope I have my levels okay here as he comes in.
Ground control to Major Tom.
You know, that's the iconic sound of David Bowie.
It's pretty spooky.
Ground control.
And he's even harmonizing. He's so talented here.
Uh-huh.
It is very spooky as it plays. You can hear there's no band behind this.
Right.
Take your protein pills and put your helmet on.
Yeah, you know that one, huh, Beth? You've heard that song before. Yeah.
So it does sound a little naked all by itself.
Absolutely. As if you were just singing in the shower by yourself without the rest of the group there.
With David Bowie in the adjoining shower.
We won't go there. Okay?
No. Probably not. So I'm going to take the place of the HPU orchestra.
Yes, you are now the de facto HPU symphonic band.
And it's a heavy responsibility.
It is indeed. It is indeed. Now, what we're going to be doing here is you're going to be playing the part of the acoustic guitar for us today, which leads in before David Bowie actually begins to sing. So our listeners at the concert will not hear what we call the click track.
Right.
The click track is what keeps the tempo and keeps the beat, which is very important in this piece because your guitar has to come in.
It is to me.
Oh, absolutely. You have to come in and play before Bowie sings.
Right.
So there's going to be a metronomic click that you're going to hear here right now, but our listeners at the concert won't hear. I'm going to give you an example here. So you get eight clicks, three, four, five, six. Now you come in with the guitar lead. Yeah, and keeping the tempo and steady is really important. And we're building up in here. Other background instruments are coming in while you're doing this lead-in. Some mallets, some vibraphones. And now we get ready for the voice in Ren 2, 1.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom.
Yeah, now you're the band.
Take your protein pills and put your helmet on.
So once again, the click's not heard by everybody else. Only myself and the guitarist will hear the clicks in the concert.
Six, commencing countdown, engines on.
And we continue to write all the music for all of the band instruments.
Check ignition and may God's love be with you.
So this gives you a chance to be Bowie's band.
Well, it's as close as I'll ever come.
Me too, probably.
But that is going to be difficult for. Well, but the musicians are following you as the conductor.
Right, right. They have me up. I've got
the guitar player
on.
Because he's got to lead in before the vocal. He's got to stay with that click.
Yeah. But once everything gets going, the band just follows me and the guitar player.
Yeah.
And then we just follow all the way through there and sing along with Bowie. And it's a heck of a project. I tested this a little while back in a small concert, and the audience went crazy. They're just like, wow,
I didn't
know this could be done.
Well, you know, one of the things that is going to drive your guitar player nuts is that, you know, you're used to hearing numbers as where the beat is.
Right.
So right in the middle of when you're in your mind going 1, 2, 3, 4, a voice starts doing the countdown 10, 9, 8, 7.
Exactly. Counting it backwards as you're counting forwards.
Because
like,
I was playing it, I thought, wait a minute, he just said 6. What, 6? What is that?
6, I'm going to beat 4 here.
Exactly.
Oh, and by the way, I had demonstrated this to you real quick.
Yes.
We even have the actual stylophone. This was the iconic sound. That was in the piece, and I actually brought the stylophone, this gigantic, very heavy, expensive instrument with me, and it makes one of the most bizarre sounds you'll ever hear. Yeah, that was the actual instrument. This was the biggest thing in 1969, believe it or not.
I've got to get one.
In the early days of synthesizers, as they say.
That is a truly cheesy sound. That you
oh, yeah. How big? Can you describe it for
it
our
looks
listeners?
Like a transistor radio.
Yeah, exactly. Sounds like one,
looks
too.
Like it cost about $5. That's
hey, $25 online.
I'll give you $26 for it. Joe, it's great to have you on the show, and I can really tell that, you know, you're really having fun with this job, aren't you?
Oh, I really do, because it's our job. It's our job to experiment. It's our job to highlight new composers and unknown composers. That's what we do in our university and academic world of band, and it's really fun.
But, you know, also, Joe, as you well know, music is joy, right?
Pure joy.
And if you can communicate that, you're well on your way.
Absolutely, and that's where we want to go.
Great to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Chris. Great to be here.
Joe Ruskowski is the HPU Director of Bands. His symphonic band is performing tomorrow night at Roosevelt High School with the virtual David Bowie, among many others, and details are on our HPR website.
It's Lynn Rossetto Casper. It's one thing to master cooking techniques and entirely another to master flavor. Join us this week with Indian chef Raghavan Iyer for the Indian flavoring tricks that will echo through everything you cook. That's The Splendid Table from APM.
Saturday morning at 9, following Weekend Edition. Support for The Conversation comes from the First Unitarian Church of Honolulu, located at 2500 Pali Highway, unitarians of hi.org.
HPR listeners who are also members recognize the vital connection between their support and the station's health. Mahalo to Ina Miller of Honolulu, Margaret Matsunami of Hilo, and Robert Doan of Kalaheo for their membership gifts. Many members prefer the convenience of giving monthly through the station's lifetime membership program. You can choose the amount you want to give, adjust it at any time in the future, and you'll be secure knowing that you've done your part. Information and a downloadable gift form are at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. It's 8:27. This is The Conversation on statewide, member-supported HPR2. After all the talk about making this the legislative session that creates greater government transparency, well, we're down to the wire. CivilBeat.com reporter Chad Blair joins us today for the reality check to look at some of those good government bills, what's dead and what's alive. First up, good morning, Chad. Chad, you there? I can't hear Chad. Okay, well, I don't know what's happened this time around, but we don't have Chad. We will figure it out and carry on. Current events. Remember that class? You had to find something in the news and stand up and tell everybody about it. It could have been a lot more fun if Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me had been around, but unless you're under about 25, it probably wasn't a weekend staple to help find an A-worthy subject. Luckily, for the past 15 years, you haven't had to sweat it out quizzing yourself, and next week you can see who really sweats when Wait, Wait's live cinecast, okay, in our case, the delayed broadcast, comes to the movies. Peter Sagal joins us now by phone. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. We miss you around these parts.
Not nearly as much as I miss. I was about to say miss your parts, but that would be misconstrued. Miss Hawaii, let's say. It's been a while.
Much, much better. Well, maybe
don't
we can
think?
Rectify that in the future.
I'd love to.
You know, we've been in love with Wait, Wait, and game shows on radio for such a long time, since, what, you know, the 1930s. Why is it that we seem to have this incredible love affair with radio quiz shows?
That's a good question. Some years ago, I actually did a history of radio quiz shows for NPR, and I found out that some of the very first radio programs, going back to the 20s, were quiz shows. And it's always been a staple of radio, and if you expand it into game shows, into TV. And I think it has some of the excitement of sports on TV, which we all like. And that is, it's something that's happening right in front of you, and you don't know what's going to happen. And in the case of public radio, of course, doing a news quiz provides our listeners a chance to indulge in their favorite hobby, which is feeling smug. We've done surveys, we've done focus groups, and your primary public radio listener likes to feel well-informed. And so mainly, because our questions are pretty easy, actually, they mostly enjoy sitting at home going, I knew that. And we're happy to provide that service.
Or do they just love to sit there and talk back to the radio?
Well, the other reason our show, I think, is successful is because we are incredibly impolite, which is, of course, a change for public radio. One of our slogans is, we say the things on the radio that most people just shout at their radios. And so we actually say it. So it's great fun. We're a little bit of a release, I think.
But, Peter, that said, there's still a line, and there's still a line that you maintain, too, however far it may be from, everybody else. You know, this past week you ran a best-of show, and I'm curious whether you had already been planning to do that or that was in response to the Boston bombing.
We had already been planning to do that. We generally don't shy away from moments of national disaster. We did a show as soon as we could after 9/11.
Well, that's why I'm asking, because I was a little curious.
No, we had pre-scheduled a break. As a matter of fact, we scheduled that break, and I took advantage of it in part and went and ran the Boston Marathon.
I know you did. And finished.
I finished. I finished about 4 minutes before the bomb went off and was about 100 yards away. So I was too busy actually living that week's news to actually make jokes about it.
Well, and glad that you get to make jokes in future.
Yes,
because
yes.
You are in one piece.
I am in exactly one similarly sized piece as I was before. I was very, very lucky and do not consider myself in any way a victim of that event. There are people who really are.
Should there be some things, though, that comedy leaves alone, or really is comedy the way of coping with it?
I think both things are true. Comedy is the way of coping with trauma. And I think, we found that out after 9/11 when, we did our show, and it wasn't the best show we ever did, but it was a show, and we made our jokes, and people were so grateful for our mediocre jokes because it gave them, as they put it, a break, a way to sort of relax while listening to the news. I think humor is always a way of coping with a tragedy, death, the inevitable decline of us all. I think the things, though, you can't make fun of is you can't make fun of people who are hurt through no fault of their own. And I think that's really important. What humor does is it makes fun of human foible, of the flaws in us all. And if someone is blown up or hurt or in any other way, really adversely affected through no fault of their own, there's nothing there for humor to do except hopefully to comfort that person. But we would never, ever make fun of victims of, not only bombings but tsunamis, natural disasters, things like that. That's just that I don't think anybody would find funny, and nor do we. I mean, our basic rule is if we find something funny, we think our listeners will too, and that's worked out well for us so far.
And it gives everybody else a good release even when things are pretty dire.
Yeah, that's the point.
How much time do you actually spend together when you're not doing the show?
You mean myself and the panelists, the cast
yeah.
are here? Not a lot. We most of us live in different cities, for one thing. For example, this upcoming show this week for the Cinecast, it'll be myself, Mo Rocca, who lives in New York, Paula Poundstone, who lives in Los Angeles, and Tom Baudet, who lives in Vermont. So, we get together to do these shows. We do like each other a lot, and we hang out with each other when we can, but I wish... I kind of sometimes wish we had like a Wait, Don't Tell Me Clubhouse like they did on The Monkees, the old TV show where they all live together. But no, it's not like that. I do have colleagues with whom I do the show who aren't the on-air talent. Mike Danforth, Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton, plus some technical people, Lorna White and Robert Newhouse. And we do spend a lot of time together. And fortunately, we all get along pretty well. We're a small crew of people who does the show every week.
And sometimes that can breed a lot of trust as well as contempt.
Yes, familiarity breeds both things at the same time. It's like growing tomatoes and weeds. They both happen.
Well, happening this next week is going to be this Cinecast, which is
yes.
another avenue for wait. Why do it this way?
Well, because as you guys know in Honolulu, two things. A, we sometimes travel around and do the show, as we did in Honolulu. I think it was back in 2002, which was too long ago. But we also can't get to all
ago?
The yeah, I know,
wow.
Isn't that crazy? And we also can't get to all the places we want to go to. For example, back to Honolulu would be one of the places.
I take it you'd like to come back to Honolulu.
Have you picked that up?
Yeah.
By the way, yeah. And by the way, if Ellen in Kauai is listening, hey Ellen, we'll try to be back as soon as we can. Innkeeper. Just want to say that's who I'm talking to. I'm talking to an innkeeper. Lovely woman. Paradise Inn in Kauai. Recommend it. Anyway, the point of this is that there's a lot of places we'd love to go to that would love to have us, but we just can't go to. There aren't enough weeks in the year, and there's not enough of us to go around. So this way, by doing the show in a theater in New York that has the technical facilities and broadcasting it in HD, people all over the country can see it and get, I guess, the next best thing to being there, as somebody used to use as an ad slogan. Who was it? You know, or maybe it's like the old Edward R. Murrow show, You Are There, with Peter Sagal and Tom Baudet as they make fart jokes. Dun, dun, dun.
Maybe not Uncle Walter, but certainly you.
Something like that. Something like
that.
But you
know what? But you know what? The fact that you're doing this so that you can get to places where you don't necessarily get to go to, that may be fine for everybody else because they get to see you in real time. Over here, where you haven't been for, 12 years or so, we have to see it with a delayed telecast because otherwise it would be, 1 o'clock in the morning that you'd have to be doing it.
I know, and we can't stay up that late. I'm really sorry.
That's the reason why you have to come back.
Look, if we are going to have a discussion about whether or not Wait, Don't Tell Me should come back to Hawaii soon, it's going to be a short discussion because I'm just going to agree with you.
Well,
good. It really isn't a matter of, yes, but no. Yes, we want to come back as soon as possible, and we will try to arrange it, really, because we really want to come to Hawaii. We're not fools.
Yeah, I get that, especially in the middle of winter.
Yes.
All right. I know we got to let you go because you got a lot of people to talk to today. But thanks very much for spending a little time with us this morning. And good luck with the Cinecast next Thursday. We'll be watching even in delayed time.
Oh, it'll be my pleasure. Thank you. I hope you can see it. And believe me, as soon as we get back, you'll hear the cries of delight from the airport.
I'm sure. And do one more thing for me. Say hi to Carl Castle and tell him he's still the best bobblehead ever.
I will tell him.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
For 15 years, Peter Sagal has given overachievers a good reason to pay attention to the week's news. Great moments of gloating at all the right answers, even if that doesn't mean they get Carl Castle on their outgoing message. Wait, Don't Tell Me, the Saturday quiz show heard on 450 public radio stations, gets the cinematic treatment next Thursday night, May 2nd. For ticket information about the Hawaii event, call HPR during business hours. Okay, we're going to try this again. Now, after all the talk about making this the legislative session to create greater government transparency, now it's truly down to the wire. CivilBeat.com reporter Chad Blair is here to join us for today's reality check to look at some of those good government bills, what's dead and what's alive. Hi there.
Now, how do you know I'm here, Beth Ann?
I know you're here because they said he's there. We have him there. And I believe it when Lillian speaks. Okay, first up, what died? And it's one of those Franken bills we talked about yesterday,
right,
SB 66.
By the way, some of those Franken bills are actually arguably good bills, and this is one of them. Now, we're saying the practice of taking a whole other bill and putting it into another bill and creating this hybrid is not a good practice, but there are occasions when it may be warranted. Still, Senate Bill 66, this is the one that called for making financial disclosures of members who sit on powerful state boards and commissions like the Land Use Commission, the Land Board, the Labor Board. Seems like a good thing so that we know whether there's a conflict of interest in the public. Well, the House and Senate could not agree on language in that bill, and for now it is dead. It could still be revived, a la Frankenstein, next week by a legislative procedure, but for now that good government bill appears to be dead.
I want to talk to you about one that's still alive, though, while we still have a little time to talk about it. House Bill 1132, the one that requires legislators to file a disclosure of their financial interests a little earlier than they have been doing in the past to do that with the Ethics Commission, so it happens before the session rather than after.
That's right. The current law says that you don't have to file, if you're a legislator, your financial interest until the end of May. Now, legislative session runs from January to early May. So if you're in the public, if you're a media person like me and you want to know, hey, does your lawmaker have a conflict of interest? Let's say they work for a company that has a special interest in a bill that's pending right now. Well, that's the kind of thing you can't know until after session. But 1132 does appear to be moving. It's going to go to a full vote next week, and that would be an example of a good government bill that I think we can all welcome.
All right. We talked about House Bill 1481 yesterday, which sets up partial public funding, so we'll skip over that one for the moment. But how about the anti-voter intimidation law, the Senate Bill 827?
It is still a lot. Let's see. I got to check it. Sometimes these numbers just kind of wash over you, and there's so many in your head. You're talking about the one that says you can't intimidate a voter who is filling out their absentee ballot. Is that the one?
Right.
It is still alive. Specifically, it applies to unions and employers and frankly, candidates. And as you know, there have been concerns here, particularly on Oahu, where some lawmakers, we won't name them right now, may have been standing in the same room as voters saying, hey, would you vote this way or that? This bill would seem to ensure that practice wouldn't happen anymore if it passes next week.
Well, you're going to be stationed down there at the ledge. We'll talk more tomorrow when we see what happens with the rest of today. Thanks, Chad.
Sure, Beth Ann. My apologies for the technical glitch early on.
Don't worry about it. That's what real live radio is all about. We carry on and we hopefully keep calm in the process. Chad Blair is the political reporter for CivilBeat.com.
This is The Conversation on statewide, member-supported HPR2, Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook. Coming up, Big Island Spring Swing, your letters, the answer to the backyard quiz. But before all that, Al Jazeera has today's international news.
Hello from Doha. Adrian Finnegan here with some of the top stories in Al Jazeera. Protesters have been rallying across Iraq to voice their anger at the Shia-led government. They're calling for Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki to step down and for an end to discrimination against Sunnis. Meanwhile, Iraqi soldiers have retaken the town of Suleiman Beg, north of Baghdad. Earlier, Sunni gunmen stormed the local police station in response to a raid in the town of Hawija on Wednesday, but they left following negotiations with local tribal leaders. Pressure's mounting on the U.S. President Barack Obama to broaden his role in the Syrian conflict. That's after his administration revealed that it has evidence suggesting that President Bashar al-Assad's forces may have used chemical weapons. But U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel also said that further confirmation will be needed before any action will be taken. South Korea says that it's pulling all its workers out of the Kaesong industrial complex. Seoul's decision comes after North Korea rejected its offer for talks to reopen the jointly run zone. Meanwhile, the U.S. and South Korea have continued joint military exercises. It's part of annual combined exercises involving the two nations, but North Korea has called it rehearsals for an invasion. Police in Bangladesh say that business owners at a building which collapsed near Dhaka on Wednesday ignored an order to evacuate. It had been inspected just the day before it collapsed, killing over 300 people. Hundreds more are trapped in the rubble. More on all those stories at aljazeera.com. Thanks, and I'll see you again. Bye for now.
As always on Friday, we take a look at what's coming up starting on Monday. And Bill Dorman, HPR News Director, joins us for a preview. Good morning.
Hey, Beth Ann. You know, next week's a busy week. We were talking with Chad about a lot that's going on in the legislature. Elsewhere on the government front, we're going to be hearing from the city and county of Honolulu about what comes on their plan for the homeless. Next Wednesday is when we hear the plan, the details of their plan to be released. You can expect pretty much some version of this housing first approach, but a lot of details remain uncertain. And something to watch for here, among other parts, are some of the mechanics of cooperation. There are a lot of agencies involved in this, a lot of nonprofits, a lot of folks doing good work, but it's tricky to coordinate all of that. And it's going to be interesting to take a look not just at the substance of the plan, but also the process of how they're going to do that, because that's something that's vitally important for the future of all of this and the development, and we'll take a look at how all that comes down.
I mean, it also comes down to the fact that while many hands do make light work, you better have a good plan in there and coordinate it well, otherwise you can have a great big mess.
It's all
and
true.
That's not what we want to see happen, especially as we deal with homelessness. Thank you so much. Bill Dorman is Hawaii Public Radio's news director. Life, letters, love, oh, 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 oh. It's a Friday, which means, yeah, it's time for us to read your letters and emails. After the reality check about Christopher Didi's crowdfunding efforts, we got roundly trounced by Ted Baker.
Aloha, Beth Ann and Chris. As is often the case, I found myself shouting at the radio this morning when the two of you closed the conversation with expressions of surprise, if not indignation, about Christopher Didi's crowdsource fundraising for his defense. Your expressed belief that this is somehow novel or improper or whatever made me wonder how closely you follow national news or whether you just have a short memory. Internet-based fundraising has been used to support litigation in another recent notorious criminal case, one that also involves a murder charge, racial conflict, and the tension between possibly prejudicial pre-trial publicity regarding the extent of justifiable use of force and the First Amendment right of free speech. The case, George Zimmerman and the killing of Trayvon Martin, white Hispanic shooter, black victim. Stand Your Ground defense, funded at least in part by his website. For sure, this approach is not often used, but it is hardly unprecedented, and at least one precedent is fresh, widely known, and strikingly similar. Come on, guys, get out of the bubble, or at least don't leave us to think you live in one.
Following Chris's interview with Constance Hale about language precision, we receive this from Claude Roth. I listen to your program each morning and wish you would bring this up regarding your remarks this morning about the butchering of our English language. I cannot help but get irritated when I hear the common but improper use of the single instead of the plural in the most simple conjugation, such as there is many ways to skin a cat instead of there are many ways, there is many instances, etc., etc. Have you noticed? It has become part of our language. What a shame.
And this was in our email right after Beth Ann's interview with Randall O'Toole about the best and highest use of land. O'Toole of the Cato Institute included a very skewed version of facts from him. A modest home in Hawaii currently costs about $150 per square foot to build, not including the land. So a 1,000-square-foot house costs a minimum of $150,000 in addition to the land, so probably $300,000 minimum. A $60,000 house is impossible to build anywhere, in my experience, as a licensed builder in Florida and Hawaii. The availability of houses in that range on the mainland is due to foreclosures and catastrophic losses by the previous owners, not any loosening of regulations. O'Toole is toying with the hopes and dreams of the people here in a cynical attempt to get regulations relaxed for the benefit of developers. Aloha, ahui ho, Stephen H. Fox.
Thanks for the letters. Email us anytime at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org or find us on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation. Earlier in the show, we talked about the danceless beginning of the now musical Merry Monarch Festival. Once the competition centered on Kalakaua beard look-alike contests and relay races, it wasn't until 1971 when Kumuhula's Auntie Dottie Thompson and Uncle George Naope introduced Hawaii's dance into the competition. For the first 5 years, only Wahine Halau competed, but the opportunity for individual glory came with the solo Miss Aloha Hula competition. We wanted to know if you could name the first winner, and now we'll fill you in. She's been teaching Hawaiian dance since the age of 15, and three of her daughters have since held the title. Today, she shares a halau with her daughter, Keola Laulani, an eighth generation of Kumuhula in her family, and her name, most fittingly, Aloha Wong. That's today's quiz. If you've got one, send it in to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for the conversation comes from Bush Consulting, providing IT support, customized network services, and backup recovery for Hawaii's businesses since 1990. Learn more about outsourced IT at buschconsulting.com.
It's an unlikely setting for jazz big band music, idyllic Honoka'a on Hawaii Island, a town of about 2,500 souls, far from the neon-lit urban streets we associate with the sounds of mass saxophones and brass. But Honokaa band director Gary Washburn has made his school band program into a formidable talent source for more than 20 years. His Honokaa High School Jazz Band is preparing its spring concert, and Gary's on the phone from the band room. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning.
You know, I've been hearing about you for a lot of years, and it's quite remarkable the amount of good music that's been coming out of a pretty little town. Where do you find all these people?
They just live here. When I first came here to this community, the first thing I discovered was that there was just so much natural talent, and I was just amazed.
Well, you know, talent's great, but as you know, you've got to do something with it, right? And it really seems to me that you've taken a lot of kids far beyond where they thought they might ever go in music. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I agree. Aside, you know, from the common thing of just keeping them in school, there's been so many of them that have gone into the professional life of being a musician or something associated with music as an occupation.
Well, if you do choose that for your life, you'd better have a very disciplined approach, right?
Absolutely.
You got to have a lot more than talent, I guess is what I'm saying.
Oh, absolutely.
How do you get that across to kids?
Well, I teach from the heart, and I try to teach by example. I am a professional musician myself, and I'm students see me go through, you know, trying to be their teacher and having a professional life and using the professional life in class to set an example for them.
Running off at night to play gigs, yeah?
Yes, and getting up early in the morning to make sure I get my practice in.
Mm-hmm.
I get down here about 6 o'clock so I can get an hour worth of practice in before school starts. And I express that to them. By saying, don't bother me before 7:30.
Well, I mean, and that's hugely important, right? You never, you know, no matter how good you are, if you don't practice, you're not going to be that good very quickly, yeah?
Absolutely. It's just like an athlete, you know, you have to stay in shape. You have to keep all of the things that come together to make you successful at playing music. You have to keep them in shape, tuned up.
Is that a tough sell?
Yes, to be honest. I mean, no. I get a very few percentage out of all of the students, you know, maybe 5% at the very most really practice, you know, and work at it.
Mm-hmm. There's, you know, we've seen a lot. I mean, music, the landscape of music has changed so much in the last 20, 30 years, where there's a lot of music that is now created by things like sampling, where you're sort of grabbing pre-recorded tracks and kind of cobbling them together. But it's that whole path of practice, learn an instrument, and then become a musician seems to have been broken up by, you know, the rap and hip-hop style of things. Has the emphasis for some young people gone away from learning how to play your axe?
I don't think so, because I stress how simple it is to use other people's music rather than create your own. I explained to the students that, you know, in my growing up, I always had to put on the vinyl and listen to it and back it up and listen to it and imitate it and do it again. And I explained to them that they just don't have an excuse nowadays. They have everything at their disposal to improve.
Yeah. Get a lesson on YouTube.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just there.
So in a way, I mean, the tools for really attaining a very great deal of proficiency on an instrument are more readily available than ever before, yeah?
Absolutely, and the hard part is the discipline, because there's so many distractions for young people through iPods and YouTube, et cetera, you know. There are just so many distractions. It's really hard to sit down and spend time with yourself and work on music.
It really makes it sound, Gary, as if example, setting an example is the only way. And I suspect when your kids see you, they see somebody who's got a pretty good life from music, right?
I would hope so.
I mean, you know, in terms of the rewards it brings you, kind of, and I'm talking obviously about spiritual, you know, personal rewards. But do you feel that? Do kids watching you for that?
Yes, I do. I find that a lot of students come to me and express, that to me, that I have helped, through my example, show them a way of working music. I mean, even if they don't become professional, I push them beyond their the limits that they set for themselves. I show them that they can do more than they think they can.
Well, Gary, that in itself is a pretty powerful lesson, music aside. So it's great to talk to you this morning. Thanks for being available for us.
Well, oh, you bet, and thank you so much.
My pleasure. Gary Washburn is the director of the Honoka'a High School Jazz Band. Their spring concert's tonight at 7 p.m. at the Honoka'a People's Theater, and you can learn more from our HPR website.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Travassa Hana, an experiential resort with daily flights to Hana on Mokulele Airlines, celebrating Hawaii through adventure, culinary, culture, fitness, and spa programs. Travassa.com/Hana.
Beth Ann, we talked to two different student band directors today, and I could really feel the joy that they feel themselves in music and that they pass along in teaching music. And it's something that goes beyond being a musician, what they teach, I really think.
It's an amazing thing when you can actually teach someone joy, or at least awaken it in that student. And when I was watching Joe a little earlier with all of his magic boxes that he brought into our studio.
We had so much fun,
We even had virtual David Bowie. But how he explained all of that, you couldn't help but smile over all of this. And right now we need good reasons to smile, and seeing a student who plays because of the joy of it, there's not a lot that gets better than that.
Well, if you're looking to get rich, you might want to try something else. But if you want to have a good life, it's a very good way to go. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, that's going to do it really for us for this week. But we got a lot of interesting stuff happening next week at the last week of the ledge. I don't know whether to say yippee or I'm going to miss it.
And nobody knows what to say at this point.
Well, hopefully by Thursday we'll have plenty to say, because we're going to do a wrap-up of what's been happening with the Ledge's session on Town Square. And then go out and celebrate afterward and see Peter Sagal. And wait, don't tell me, live at the movies or live tape delay to us at the movies, whatever, it's going to be fun. So that's it for this week. Coming up on Monday, we've got a lot of good things for you. Jeff Portnor would be here. He's going to talk about why media is still unhappy with the current version of the Shield Law.
And a look inside the pre-war world of a celebrated heiress and art connoisseur.
Also on Monday, Bill Sage will be at the Blue Tree Cafe to find out what's brewing. And meanwhile, you can talk back to your radio anytime you want. Just find us or each other on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation. Send us a tweet at HI Conversation or Because HPR.
If you want to hear today's show again, get another past show or links to more information, check the archive on our HPR website, hawaiipublicradio.org/theconversation. Our executive producer is Beth Ann Kozlovich.
Lillian Song produces the program. Maddie DeShazo is our production assistant. And Andy Walters is our intern.
The Backyard Quiz theme was written for us by John DeMello. And you can blame us for the rest of the music. I'm Chris Vanderkirk.
I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. We'll meet you on Monday and pick up the conversation. Have a good weekend.